Right, good evening, everyone. This week we start with the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar. And Bamidbar is known, as you know in English, if you look at the English Bible, Bamidbar is known as the Book of Numbers. The Book of Numbers is not a name given to it only by the Christian Bible. The Gemara in Sota Daf Lamed Vav actually refers to Bamidbar, to this very Sefer, as Chumash HaPekudim, the Book of Numbers. So that the term, the Book of Numbers, is in fact one of the names, one of the legitimate names for Sefer Bamidbar, referred to it as such in the Gemara itself. So what's the connection between those two names, Bamidbar meaning in the desert, and Numbers, and why is Numbers so important? It's true that right in the very beginning, in Parshas Bamidbar, and the Parsha we're going to read on Shabbos, there is a counting of Numbers, there is a counting. And there's a second counting later on in Parshas Pinchas, so the children of Israel are counted twice. But is that a reason to call the whole Sefer Pekudim, Numbers? Why is the counting, why are the Numbers so terribly important? And in a sense, even the word Shemos for the second one, Bereishis we understand, that's the beginning of everything. So the term Bereishis for the first of the five books makes good sense, apart from it being the word with which the book opens. Shemos, the second book, which is the whole of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole Exodus and the giving of the Torah, is the most imaginative name we can come up with, Shemos. Imagine the number, the kind of sales we would get at Amazon or Barnes & Noble if we marketed a book called Names, Shemos. And this book is about this amazing story and the miracles of coming out of Mitzrayim and the giving of the Torah and the formation of the Jewish people as a nation and all the battles and things that took place at that time and the highs and the lows. Such an exciting story, and it would be called Names. Why is it called Shemos? Vayikra is a little bit better. Vayikra, and he called. That's the calling, the mission of the Jewish people, the Jewish mission in Vayikra. So that's already quite an interesting name. And then Bamidbar, in the desert, okay. That implies a journey through the desert. That's quite interesting. But Numbers, Pekudim, that's about as boring as Shemos. So why is it called Shemos, and why is it called Pekudim? And then Devarim, the Book of Words, again, is a more interesting one. So what is common about those two terms, Pekudim and Bamidbar, is both connote a journey. Both demonstrate a journey. Bamidbar certainly shows a journeying through the desert. But the idea of Numbers, the idea of Pekudim, also shows a journey, which we'll describe and we'll discuss tonight. The one shows a geographic journey through the desert, and the other shows a moral journey, a journey of the construction and deconstruction of the nation, demonstrated by the ways they're counted at the beginning of Bamidbar and later on towards the end, and we'll understand those two a little bit more clearly as we move forward. The fact that it's a journey we see already implied in a medrash right in the very beginning of the Torah, where on the Posuk in Bereishis, Vayavdel Elokim Bein Ha'or Vein HaChoshech, Hashem divided between the light and the darkness. The Medrash says in Parsha Gimel, Keneged Sefer Bamidbar. That's talking about Sefer Bamidbar. This dividing between the light, the darkness and the light, is Sefer Bamidbar. So now we have another name for Sefer Bamidbar. It's kind of this, the division. Shehu Mavdil, because that book also is the dividing point Bein Yotzei Mitzrayim L'Bo'ei Ha'aretz, between the Jews who left Egypt and the Jews who came to Israel. So there's a qualitative transformation that takes place in the Jewish people from the beginning of Bamidbar to the end of the Bamidbar that converts them, that transforms them from being the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people who emerged from Egypt, to the people who entered Israel. Two different qualities of nation. And we'll understand that quality. Was it an evolution or was it a devolution? Who was greater, the ones who came out of Egypt or the ones who came into Israel? And that we'll understand as we work through tonight. if we look at them, who were these Yotzei Mitzrayim? Firstly, who were the ones who came into Mitzrayim? So there we have another fascinating medrash. There are a few medrashim we're going to have a look at and one piece of Zohar tonight. The second medrash, on Ve'ele Shemos B'nei Yisrael Haboi Mitzrayim, these are the names. This is why is it called Shemos? These are the names of the people who came from with Yaakov to Mitzrayim. Yaakov Avonov, Ishu Veso Bo, Yaakov and his sons, each of them with their families came, and then it gives their names. Shekulim Heim Yisrael Kitzavo HaShemayim. At that moment, when they came into Egypt, the Jewish nation, which was very small, there were only 70 people, the Jewish nation was considered similar to the Tzva HaShemayim. The Tzva HaShemayim are all the constellations of the sky. And when we talk about the constellations of the sky, we're talking about forces, we're talking about almost about angels. When we use the word angel, when we talk about a malach in the Torah, we're not talking about a kind of a being with a pretty face and wings that flaps around. That's not what a malach is. A malach is a force of energy. It's a channeling of energy from Hashem down to earth. Exactly what form that takes? Does it take the form of some being, or does it take the form of an energy source? Or there are all sorts of different manifestations of a malach, of an angel, but that's really what we mean. And the various powers, the constellations of the sky, are malachim in that sense, because God uses them to influence the world. So that's where astrology comes from. Astrology comes from, is there some kind of connection between the formation of the stars and things that happen on the earth? Absolutely, those are the channels. It's like going into a switching room where you've got all sorts of switches, and when the control room, and when they turn the switches, and all sorts of things happen outside on the factory floor, whatever it is that it's controlling, and you say, is there a connection between the switches and what happens? Yes, of course there is. But there's a human being who's turning the switches. So there's Hashem who's actually controlling the constellations. But the constellations, in terms, are the vehicles through which Hashem influences the events on the earth. And that's the meaning of the term angel. That's what an angel is. That's what a malach is. So when we talk about the kechavim, when we talk about the stars in a spiritual sense, in a mystical sense, in a kabbalistic sense, not in an astronomical sense, we're talking about the stars and the constellations as forces of energy that Hashem uses to impact movement on the earth. It impacts weather, it impacts movement, it impacts tides, it impacts all the things that impact us. And that's all through these heavenly bodies. So the Medrash says at the beginning of Shmos that Shkulin Hein Yisrael Kitzva HaShemayim, Yisrael are like the Tzva HaShemayim, which in Beverly Hills terminology we would say is the Jews were stars. And that's what it really means. Each one was a star. Special, unique, and most important of all, very influential in the way the world operates. As it says in Tehillim, Mone mispar lakechavim l'chulom shemos yikro. Hashem counts the stars, remember that counting, and gives each of them a name, l'chulom shemos yikro. Each of them has a name. Each of these forces in the world, each of these stars, each one has a name. Af HaKadosh Baruch Hu kishiyod Yisrael l'Mitzrayim. So when the Jews came down to Mitzrayim, Mono misparam kama hayu, he counted them. And since they were all stars, he gave each one of them a name. So the name becomes very important in describing the essence of somebody very specific. When you talk about a name, you're talking about an individual. Talk about a Jew, you're talking about a person of a particular nationality or race. You talk about an American, you're talking about one of 300 million people. Talk about a Chinese person, you're talking about one of goodness knows how many. What, a billion people, or however many there are, more than that. There are a billion people in China. It's about one of a billion. You're not talking about the individual. But when you talk about the person by name, you're talking about an individual with all the force and power that an individual has. And when the 70 Jews came to Mitzrayim with Yaakov, each one was a star. Each one was an individual that had that kind of power. So if we see where we're coming from, this transformation we're talking about, that Bamidbar is Vayavdel, that Bamidbar is the transformation of the Jews coming out of Egypt, the Jews coming into Israel, let's see firstly what came into Egypt. What came into Egypt were 70 massive human beings, each unbelievably powerful, each a star that influences the forces of nature. That was the power of each of these people who came. And what about a little bit later on? How did they come out of Egypt? So if we look at the beginning of the parasha, we see. Because right in the beginning of the parasha, in the second verse, Hashem says to Moshe, in Midbar Sinai b'Ohel Moed. So where does this happen? It happens in the desert of Sinai, in the Ohel Moed, in the Mishkan, in the temple, tabernacle, be'echad l'chodesh hasheni, on the first day of the second month. That's the month of Iyar, the month that we're just completing now. Bashona hashenis, in the second year of them coming out of Egypt. It says on Mimith Meitz Mitzrayim. So that date is quite significant, because on the first of Nisan, a month before that, the Mishkan was established. So the Mishkan is 1 month old. It's just getting into its usage. And in this Mishkan, in the tabernacle, in the desert, Hashem gives the mitzvah, count the Jewish people. Su'u'es rosh kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Count, and he uses the term, uplift their heads, elevate them, count them. So that's interesting, it's elevation. L'mishbechoysom l'vesavoysom. According to their families, according to the house of their fathers, b'mispar shemos, according to the number of their names. They're still shemos, they're still names, they're still individuals. L'gulgaloisom, each skull, each head, you count with a name. You don't just run around counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you count Reb so-and-so, Ben Reb so-and-so, 1. Reb so-and-so, Ben Reb so-and-so, 2. Each one has a number and a name. But you don't drop the name. This is not just quantitative. Says this Sforno on this. Bemispar shemos, ki hoyo az kol echod ma'usu hador, because at that time, every single one of that generation, nechshav bishmo hamore al tzurosoy ha'ishit, was considered by his name that signifies his individuality. So we're talking about individuals here. Just as there were 70 individuals who came into Egypt, there are now 600,000, some 600,000 individuals leaving Egypt. They've retained that individuality right through their slavery. They're still individuals. L'ma'ala son, that's an amazing achievement. Al derech va'edo acho b'shem. As Moshe says to Hashem, also, I want to know you by your name, by your essence. V'lo ken koro l'dor ba'ei haaretz. But when they came into Israel 40 years later, this was no longer true. So the Sifurno is already alerting us to the fact that this separating between those who came out of Egypt and those who went into Israel was not evolution. It was devolution. They devolved in strength. From being a group of individuals, they became an amorphous mass of people, a nation. So there's something great about becoming a nation, but they lost their individuality. And we'll see the consequences of that and what that means. So now we're beginning to become a little intrigued by the journey. During this journey, Bamidbar, because at this point, at the beginning of their journey, they're still individuals. At the end of their journey, they're not. And you'll see that if you look at the next counting, which is further on in chapter 26, verse, the beginning of 26, which is now they're getting ready to enter the land of Israel. And it says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Elazar ben Aaron ha-Kohen le'mor. And Hashem says to Moshe and to Elazar ben Aaron the Kohen, saying, this is in Bamidbar in Pinchas, Chof Vav Beis 26:2, Su'u esroish kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Once again, using the same terminology, count the heads of all the children of Israel, mi ben esrim shonov mala, from 20 years and up, leves avoisom, according to the house of their fathers. Where's the Shemoisom? Where's the name that the Sifurno says is so significant? Where's the gulgulosom? Each skull, each head, counts separately by name. That's lost. They're no longer individuals. Now they're a nation. You just want to know how many. Do a census. Figure out how many. They've lost that power. They're no longer stars. They're a great nation, but they're not a nation of great people to the same degree that they were when they set out from Egypt. And it's quite interesting because a lot of the secular perspective of the Jewish people is this band of slaves that leave Egypt and they evolve during the desert and now they become an independent nation ready to conquer the land of Israel. We're seeing a different picture here. We're seeing 600,000 giants coming out of Egypt and 600,000 pygmies coming into Israel. What happened? The nation became stronger, but the individuals became smaller. What happened to them? How did that happen? Where did it happen? That's the story of Bamidbar. That's the story of this book. And that's why it's called Chumash HaPekudim, because by looking at the way they're counted in the beginning and the way they're counted at the end, you notice the devolution. If you don't notice the different ways of the counting, you don't notice that you're counting different things. That in the first counting, you're counting brilliant individuals, and in the second counting, you're counting members of a nation. You're counting numbers. That's why it's called Chumash HaPekudim, and that's why it's called Bamidbar. So what really happened? Let's have a look at the meaning of counting. Counting is very interesting because when you count somebody, if you look at the Hebrew words for counting firstly, so the three words, let's say, for counting, lispor, a modern Hebrew word, sphero, we talk about, we count the sphero at the moment, lispor, comes from the word sefer. Sefer is a book. It's a story. So what is important about a story? What's important about a story is that it's sequential. That you don't put the third chapter before the second chapter, and you don't put the eighth chapter before the fifth chapter. That things have to build up in the right sequence. They're chapters. So in Mispar, when you give things numbers, you're placing them in an order. You're creating a structure. If things are not numbered, numbered is not just about knowing a quantity. That's not Mispar. That's kind of weight. If you in halacha we have those two different ideas: the idea of a dovah shib a minyan, something that you actually count. We call it a minyan when people get together to daven. That's different from something that you weigh by the kilogram, or by the ton, or by the pound. That's different. When you weigh by the pound, you just want to know how much of a mass there is in total. You just want the total number. But when you number things, they each have an order, because number 6 comes after number 5 and it comes before number 7. And that's what Sfiras HaYomer is. And that's why if you count the wrong day, you can't go back and fix it up. You've messed up. The counting is messed up because the sequence has been destroyed. Counting means you give sequence. Accounting means you give structure. But it also means you recognize each part of the structure. That's why there's the whole discussion among the Rishonim. Is Sfiras HaYomer, is it just a mitzvah just to do the whole thing? Is one mitzvah to count 49 days? Or is the counting of each day a mitzvah? And it's both. The counting of each day is a mitzvah, and making it fulfill, completing that into all the 49 days, into the 7 weeks, is the mitzvah of completion. So minyan does both. When we talk about limnot, a minyan, limnot also is another word for to count. But we also talk about lemanot or minui. We talk about somebody elected, somebody appointed to a position. We use that same term because a number gives you a position in a sequence. That's what a position is in a structure. You're a president, or you're a secretary of a cabinet, or you're a senator. You have a position. You know where you are in the system. You know where you are in the structure. So in minyan, when you're counting in that sense, you're giving the things that you're counting their specific recognition as an individual component of a bigger structure of which they form a part in a particular sequence. That's what minyan is. It's very complex. And when we daven with a minyan, it's both those things. Each individual counts. Each individual is davening for themselves. And yet there's also a minyan. There's part of a whole. One has to be both at the same time. And then the third word for counting is lifkod. Chumash HaPekudim. And lifkod, what is an official called? A pakid. An official in a structure. You talk about a clerk in the government, or a person, a pakid. A tafkid is a mission. So when you talk, it's interesting that a minui and a tafkid, these are words that come from the words numbering, all imply also a sense of mission, a sense of purpose. This is what I do. This is where I fit into the bigger picture. This is the structure. So let's now have a look at the Zohar. The Zohar is very fascinating. On the beginning of the parsha, and he says the following: Kivan de Oraisa u'Mishkana itukmu. Once the Torah and the Mishkan were established, so Sinai had taken place, we had the Torah, and the Mishkan was built. We now had the tabernacle. Ba'o kudshe brichu lemifkad chiloi de Oraita. Hashem wanted to count how many people were attached to the Torah. How many officers, what is the size of the army that would carry out the Torah? And also, what is the size of the army that would carry out the mission of the Mishkan? Tachazoi, come and see. Kol milo deboi li'ityashva beduchte, any idea, anything that needs to find a place in a system, it doesn't find its place unless it's mentioned by name and given a purpose, given a specific task. That's when you fit into a structure. Well, Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so take this position here. Then that's what they do, and then it's clear. If you're managing a group of people, then you mention a person by name and you give them a task. Mention a person by name and you give them a position in the structure. And then they can figure out what to do. Ufacha, the same applies here. Bo kud shubrichu lemifkat chaylin doraisa v'chaylin demishkan. Hashem wanted to assign the positions for Torah and the positions for the Mishkan. V'chulu havekechad. And it's all like one. V'lo misparshi. And they're not separate da'amida, one from the other. Kule kegavna dileila, as it is in heaven. It's all one. The oraisa u'mishkan lo mitparshi da min da, because the Torah and the Mishkan are not separate units. The azlin kechada, and they operate as one. That's what the Zohar says. That's what the Zohar says, but what does the Zohar mean? Seems to imply that there were two countings. There was one for the Torah and there was one for the Mishkan. And some people like to understand this to mean that there's an implication that there was a counting that isn't mentioned in the Torah. We know that there was a counting after the golden calf. There was a counting when they came out of Egypt. There was another counting after the golden calf 6 months later. We know that there's a counting now. We know that there was a counting in Pinchas. But there wasn't a counting at Mount Sinai. But some want to say that the Zohar is suggesting that there was an implied counting at Sinai as well, because the Zohar goes on to say, "Uveginkach ketiv," and that's why it says in our pasuk, "Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'ohel moed." Hashem spoke to Moshe in the desert of Sinai, in the ohel moed, in the tabernacle. So the Zohar says, "Ibohel moed, amai b'midbar Sinai." If it tells us that it was in the Ohel Moed, it was in the tabernacle, why does it have to tell us it was in the desert of Sinai? We only had a tabernacle in Sinai when we got to Israel. Then later on, then the temple was rebuilt. Before Sinai, there wasn't a Mishkan. Why doesn't it just tell us it was in the Mishkan? Elochad l'oraisa v'chad l'mishkan. What it's telling us is one counting was for Sinai, for the Torah. Sinai means Mount Sinai. And one counting was for the Torah. And one counting was for the Mishkan. But the way the Shem Mishmuel understands the Zohar is not that there were two countings, but that there was one counting that took place now, and it had two dimensions to it. There's an element of counting, two purposes of the counting. There was a counting for the purpose of the Torah piece, and we'll understand what these two different ones are. There's Torah and there's temple service. And if you just think about it, we have these themes running right through the whole of Judaism. Torah is the intellectual part. Torah is the innovative part. Torah is the study. When we study the Torah, and the temple service is avodah, and that's prayer and that's sacrifice, and that's what the Kohanim and the Levim do. So we have very uniquely these two components We have a component of avodah, practice, which is the keeping of the mitzvot, tefillah, and the temple service. That's one piece. And there's another piece, which is the intellectual, the pursuit of understanding, the pursuit of knowledge, the ability to innovate ideas in Torah, to question and to answer and to extrapolate and to create new laws as we need them. That's what gives us the ability to create new laws as situations change and as science and the environment in which we're operating changes, and we have new questions of can things be used on Shabbos and how does it affect and what about kashrus. We're able to keep the Torah evolving because that's the nature of the Torah piece. But the practice doesn't evolve. We daven the same tefillah we davened thousands of years ago. We keep Shabbos the same way we kept it thousands of years ago. If we were going to do sacrifices, we would do it the same way we did it in the time of the temple. There's nothing, the lulav and esrog, the tefillin we put on are the same tefillin that our great-great-great-great-grandparents put on. There's no evolution in avodah. Avodah is static. Avodah is consistent. Torah is constantly evolving, it's dynamic. And Judaism is an unbelievable harmony between the static and the dynamic, between the consistent and the innovative, and bringing those together, managing that paradox is something that happens all the time. And the Zohar, it seems to be saying, according to the Shem Mishmuel, that this act of counting brings the two together. In a sense, it's the act of counting that gives meaning to both. So how does that work? Let's go a little bit further. We see the duality in one further medrash. This is a medrash at the end of Shemot in Parshas Vayakhel, where the medrash says, "Hamotzi b'mispar tzvam lekulam b'shem yikra." There's a verse in Yeshayahu who says that Hashem takes all the stars out in the heaven at night time, lekulam b'shem yikra, calling each one by its name. Once again, we get to the name theme. And in Tehillim, in Psalms, it says, "L'chulam shemos yikra." He calls them by their names. So the one talks about a name, and the other talks about their names. Ketzad yitkaimu shnei k'suvim elu. Asks the Medrash, how do you put these two psukim together? And Kshakodesh Baruch Hu mevakesh likroisam ke'echod, who korei l'chulam shem echod. And Hashem wants to talk to them as a generality, the stars, the angels, the forces. Then he calls them by that. He calls them by their general name. And if he wants to call a specific one, he'll call him by his own name. Michael or Gavriel. Does this only apply up in the heavens? Minayin af lamatan? No, it applies down below as well. Hashem calls Bezalel by his name. So once again, we see in this medrash this duality. There is the star quality that each one of us is an individual that is known by a particular name that God uses, just as the stars, each one has its own name that God uses, and we're also part of a klal. So the relationship between a klal and a prat, we call it. Klal is the big picture, the total structure, and prat is each component in that structure. And both are equally important. The role you play in the total structure is important. Without you, there is no structure. It's like an electrical circuit. Take one piece out, the circuit doesn't close, and you've got no electricity. So each Jew plays a part in keeping the circuit closed. But apart from that, each Jew is a circuit on his own, or her own. Each Jew himself is an enormous power that has his own circuitry game. So we have these two personalities all the time. We're a piece of the whole needed to make the whole function, and we're also a world on our own that has its own ability to function all of its own. So now if we try and understand what happens, take the star again. The idea of the star as a malach, as a channel of energy, the star influences, the star inspires, the star causes there to be change. The star connects Hashem to the world below. The star is the channel that channels the energy from the higher places down below. That's the role of the angel and of that force. Now let's have a look and see what happens to the Jews. So they come into Egypt, they're individuals, they're stars. They leave Egypt. What are they when they leave Egypt? So here we've got the time. This is soon after they've left Egypt, and here they're counted. This is the beautiful time, says the Zohar, when they achieve the harmony, when they achieve the synthesis. They have both. What are we told? Count them both lebishbechotam lebeit avotam. Count them both in turn as groups by family and household, but also bebispar shemotam kol zachar legulgulotam. But also count them by their individual names, each individual on his own. So this is a time where they get both. This is a time where each is a star, each is a powerful force of influence, and each is also a part of a massive whole. And they're able to live in that paradox. They're able to live with both those forces. This is the moment they've really got it. They've just come out of Egypt. When they went into Egypt, they weren't a group. They were individuals. They come out of Egypt, they're a group. But as a group, they haven't lost their individuality. And if you think of how important this theme is in our lives today, because we're living in a time where we're becoming more and more of a group. Our thinking is group. Our way of operating is group. We're controlled as a group. The bureaucracies have become massive. The inputs and things that influence us all the same. We're all part of the same systems. So we're becoming very connected. Humanity is becoming very connected as a group. And nations and groups within the nations are becoming very connected as a group. But what's happening to individuality? Are we able to protect that which is truly individual? And by individuality, I'm not talking about what color tattoo you've got on the outside. That's not that. That's a crying need to differentiate. The reason that people wear these weird things is because there's no difference between them. They know there's no difference. So they try and make differences in the way they behave. They try and make differences in the way they look. They try and make differences in the way they paint their skin. So as to try and look different because they feel so the same. We're living in a world where we're all the same. We think the same. We talk the same. We do the same. Everything we do is on Facebook, and now everybody knows exactly what we do. There's nothing private. There is no. When we talk about individuality, we're talking about that part of you that nobody knows. That part of you that nobody sees. Because that's where you grow. That's where you develop yourself. That's where your spirituality comes from. The moment you're exposed, that's what we called a few weeks ago, Rishus HaRabim. That's part of your public image. That's not essence. That's not identity. What other people can see is image. And we're living in a world of image. We've lost identity. We don't have identity. And we're seeking it, we're craving it to try and find identity. So when we're looking at the struggle of Bamidbar, we're looking at what's happening in a very modern sense. Taking a nation started off as individuals, then they came to a moment of synthesizing. We don't want only individuals. That's also not a healthy society. We want people who know how to work together. People who can create organizations. People who can create businesses. People who can create families. People who can create nations. People who can build non-profit organizations, governments. We need that ability. And you do that with identity. You don't do that with essence. You do that with image. You don't do that with essence. But there needs to be essence and identity behind the image. When the identity and the essence implodes and all we're dealing with is image, then we're dealing with a very fragile organization that doesn't have that strength. And that was the transformation that happened to the Bnei Yisrael that the Spoon talks about. Let's see where, in fact, it happens. So if you look in Bamidbar, it happens in chapter 10 and 11. So in chapter 10, verse 34, we have the famous paragraph with the very strange formations in front and behind it. So chapter 10, verse 35, Perik Yud, Posuk Lamed Hei, Vayehi bin Soa Ha'aroin, Vayomer Moshe, Kumo Hashem ve'yafutsu oyevecho, ve'yanusu mesanecho mipanecho, v'nucho yomar shuva Hashem rivuvot atei Yisrael. Those are the two verses we say when we take the Torah out and when we put the Torah back. Every Monday, Thursday, and twice on Shabbos. That's what we say. Every time we take the Torah out, we say, Vayehi bin Soharon, the first verse. And every time we put the Torah back, we end with Uvnecho Yomah. Shuvah Hashem Ribat Afei Yisrael. But this doesn't fit into the sequence here at all. This is like just inserted from nowhere. which is why the Gemara says it is surrounded by those two inverse nuns, which you can see at the beginning of verse 35 and at the end of verse 36, at the end of the chapter, because it's like in parentheses. It's a separate thing. And the Gemara says in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Tes Vov, this is like a separate sefer. Actually, by Midbar is three sforim. It's three books. The one book is from the beginning until here. This little verse is a book on its own. And then the third book is from here onwards. So what happens? What is this about? Says the Gemara, the reason that this is inserted here in a kind of a strange way is so as to separate. If you look at Rashi, those of you who can, in Pasuk Lamed Hei, Vayehi bin Soa Ha'aron, Asalo Simaniyot Milefanav Mileacharav, the Torah creates little signs before this verse and after this. Lomar, to teach to Enzer Mekomot, this is not where they belong. V'lama Nichtav Kan, so why are they inserted here? Kedei Lahafsik Ben Puranut LePuranut, so as to separate between two tragedies. So what are the two tragedies? The first one is just before it. Where do we see a tragedy just before it? There's no tragedy. But the Gemara says in Shabbos that the beginning of verse 33, beginning of Lamed Gimel, Vayis'u mehar Hashem, they traveled from the mountain of God, Derech Shloshet Yamim, three days. And that Vayis'u mehar Hashem is the tragedy. It took them 3 days to distance themselves from this events of Sinai. And that's when what happens in the next sentence starts. So if you go into, after Vayehi bin Soa, if you go into chapter 11, then Vayehi ha'am kemit onanim, then they started complaining, and God gets upset, Vativar bam eish Hashem, and there's a fire of Hashem that comes, Vatochal b'kzeh ha'machaneh, and it consumes and destroys some people at the outer ends of the camp. Vayitzak ha'am Moshe, and the people cry to Moshe, and Moshe davens to Hashem, Vatishka ha'esh, and the fire eases. So at this stage, they are still these stars, they are still these incredibly powerful people. And they are being, the way they're operating is bederech, as they say in Kabbalah, they're operating with the middle, with the characteristic of Tiferes. Tiferes means miracles, supernatural. So they are so powerful, they don't operate in naturally. God works with them miraculously. And everything that's happened up till now has been miraculous. At this point, they leave Sinai, and 3 days later, they're starting to grumble. That's a diminishment. So what happens when somebody so powerful drops and does something they shouldn't do? The punishment is heavy. So God immediately brings this fire, whatever that meant, a destructive force, a fire, and it causes a lot of pain and suffering. And they find that very difficult to tolerate. That immediacy of punishment, that harshness of punishment, and that leads them into a sequence of they complain, then they want meat, the mon is no longer enough. So now what is that? Is that stars? Are these still the people who came to Egypt and the people who came out of Egypt? Or are these beginning to be ordinary human beings? We want meat. We're missing the food. We don't like the menu. All of a sudden, the greatness of each individual is lost, and now you're talking like a mass of human beings, a rebellious mess. And then God brings them the slav, and he fixes it for them. And so it goes on until the beginning of the next parasha. The beginning of the next parasha is Shlach Lecho Anoshim. What is Shlach Lecho Anoshim? This causes all the trouble. This is why they don't go into Israel. Shlach Lecho Anoshim is, let's send spies. Why? Because we can't rely on miracles anymore. So let's use normal military strategy. So this is the point at which they cease to be God's nation of angels, able to function simultaneously as individual stars and as a part of a whole, and they become a mass, just they become a nation. They become a Jewish nation, a wonderful nation, a great nation, but they're a nation. And they grumble like nations, and they rebel like nations, and they want elections like nations, and later on they want kings, and they want to send spies. They've lost touch with that godly magic of success that comes through connection with God, because connection with God has to be on an individual level. It's It's not the nation that collects with God. A nation of connectors connects with God. But you've got to be a connector. You've got to be a divine connector. You've got to be able to connect with God yourself. That's the idea of a minion. You've got a minion of people. Each one is connected to God. The minion is connected to God. And if everybody's not that strong, each one's strong in a different way. So together they're able. But they're all people connecting. That's what a minion does. And that's why you can destroy a minion. Come into a minion and you're speaking while other people are davening. You're on your cell phone while somebody else is saying Kriya Shema. You destroy the minion completely. That doesn't work. You can't say you're davening with a minion. You're not davening with, not only aren't you davening with a minion, nobody's davening with a minion. You've killed the minion. Because a minion has to have an energy to it. And an energy means that everybody in the minion is doing the same thing. Everybody's connecting. That's what this nation of stars was. It was a nation of individuals. They shmos, each one had a name, and they were also mishpachos on lebeis avoisel. But there in the middle of Bamidbar, they lose it. And they just become an ordinary nation wanting to function with the ordinary laws of nature and to enter Israel using the ordinary laws of military strategy. And so God doesn't allow those first ones to even go into Israel because that wasn't the being. The people who came out of Egypt who were intended to go into Israel were intended to go into Israel as individuals who form part of a nation. But just a nation not made up of great individuals, that's not those people. Those people have to die first, and then eventually there's a new generation of people that come into that. So if we look at the transformations and we say, the transformation is not an evolution, the transformation is a devolution. They come into Egypt and they're all individuals, mighty individuals. They go through Egypt, they come out of Egypt and they're a much bigger nation. Still individuals, but the individuals have now bound themselves into nationhood. Even in Egypt, they haven't even come to Sinai yet. Or certainly when they come to Sinai, if we say that this counting took place just after Sinai, then maybe it was Sinai which made them into the nation. So they come out as individuals, and the Sinai experience gives them a national identity. You see, a national identity doesn't have to be around a country. A national identity, that's what's unique about the Jews, is that their national identity is not about a country. They were a nation before they had a country. And they've been a nation for many, many years without a country. We've always been a nation. So the country is part of our Torah, not the other way around. We are not Jews because we've got Israel. We've got Israel because we're Jews. That's what's different. Every other nation, a person's a Frenchman because he comes from France. A person's an Englishman because he comes from England. A person's an American because he comes from America. A Jew is not a Jew because he comes from Israel. It doesn't matter. He has Israel because he's a Jew. It's the reverse relationship. And what's important was in that first part where it's the Torah that made us into a nation. Then we keep our individuality. That's the unfortunate outcome of nationhood. Nationhood destroys individuality. Nationhood is a system. It's a structure. It's a bureaucracy. And it functions best when it destroys individuality. Then it can be controlled. And unless you've got a great nation, like the United States used to be, that used to understand that fact, that you've got to keep individual identity, and you've got to build a nation out of individuals and small communities of individuals, not out of a national government that wants to control 300 million people, because if a national federal government wants to control 300 million people, you've got to destroy the individuality. You can't control, you can't govern 300 million individuals. You can govern a small group of individuals. And that's how the United States was built, so that each little community has its own government. And then the different communities get together and there's a bigger government and a bigger government. But that nobody's governing 300 million people. It's not possible without destruction of individuality. And what we're observing at the moment is the destruction of individuality, not just caused by the government, caused by media and caused by technology and caused by all sorts of things, that individuality is being destroyed. So when nationality, when togetherness is created by nation, by nationhood, there's an inevitable destruction of individuality. When togetherness is created by ideology, that needn't be so. And it's quite interesting that one of the differentiators of the United States is that it's in the modern world, it's probably the only country that was founded on an idea and not on a nation, not on a geography. It was founded on an idea. And as long as people associate with an idea, tolerates individuality. In fact, an idea thrives with individuality. If there's a philosophy, then each individual is able to make that philosophy richer. A system does not thrive with individuality. A system finds individuality counter to everything it tries to achieve. And if Israel was simply going to be a piece of Torah, which is what it was intended to be, the Torah is there first. A part of the Torah, a very important part of the Torah, is our relationship to Eretz Israel, to Israel. And our ability to build a base of Mikdash there and to serve God there and to keep all the laws of agriculture there and everything that goes with having the nation. But it's a piece, it's under the overarching national identity of Sinai. Sinai is what made us into a nation, not Israel. We don't have a day that celebrates the time we came into Israel. We've got one for 1948, but we don't have for the time that Yeshua conquered Israel. We don't even know what day it was, because that's not the day we became a nation. We became a nation at Shavuot. We became a nation at Sinai. And at that time, we were still individuals. During the transition from Sinai to Israel, we started adapting ourselves to nationhood in the secular sense. And in that process, we lost that star quality of individuality. And that was the tragedy of Bamidbar. The tragedy that the Medrash and Bereshis talks about, and that the movement, the Mavdil ben Choshech L'or, the transformation between dark and light, in this case, light and dark, starting with light and becoming dark, and Sefer Bamidbar being that transition point. The Zohar pointing out that this counting here in Bamidbar includes both. It includes the counting of individuality represented by Torah, by Oraiso, by Sinai, because in Torah there's space for individuality. The whole of the Gemara is about individuality. Everybody disagrees with everybody. And people say, you get Jews together, they disagree. Sure, because they're individuals. Each one is a star. Of course they disagree. You want them to be able to disagree. That's what makes them great. That's what Torah is. But there was no disagreement in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash, there was structure, there was system. Everybody knew exactly what they had to do, and it was done a routine way. Every day, every week, the same things were done in the same way. There was no deviation. There's no individuality. And the beauty at this point of national evolution was we could do both. We could do the Avodah as one nation, and we could learn Torah as 600,000 individuals. We could innovate as 600,000 individuals, and we could conform as one nation. We could do both. We had Avodah, and we had Torah. We had Sinai, and we had Ohel Moed. We had Oraiso, and we had Mishkan. Right through, you see this duplicity. And the Zohar says, at this moment, we had it both. This was the apex, this point of Shavuos, when we come out of Mitzrayim. We've had the 49 days, and we've received the Torah. Yes, we served the golden calf. That wasn't the tragedy. Golden calf wouldn't have held us out of Egypt. There's a counting after the golden calf, in fact. After the golden calf, there was a destruction. There was punishment, you remember. Many people were destroyed. The golden calf was only 6 months after coming out of Egypt. And we had more people after the golden calf than we had coming out of Egypt. There weren't that many that we lost. The golden calf wasn't the big tragedy. We recovered from that. The big tragedy was the Meraglith. The big tragedy was the story of Bamidbar, how we lost our individuality in our desire to become part of the national system and thinking that that was going to make us great. But the greatness of the Jew is not in the national system. The greatness of the Jew is not in his individuality. The greatness of the Jew is when the Jew can blend the two together and can live as an independent individual, thinking independently, innovating independently, seeing the world independently, and at the same time, he's able to submit himself and he's able to serve God as part of a community and as part of a nation and not find conflict between the two. That's the greatness of the Jewish people that got lost during the story of Bamidbar, a greatness that until this day, we're trying to recover as a nation so that we're able to merit Mashiach coming and living that way once again. We were able to live both as individuals and as a nation serving Hashem. Good. Sure.